This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
And today, another legislative update. State Representative Virgil Osborne live from Salem into the Oregon State Legislature's current session for this year. And Virgil, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Hey, Kyle. Thanks for having me. It's good to speak with you as always.
So let's talk about some of the things going on. It seems like the homeless issue is really dominating things in a lot of vantage points. The governor yesterday talking about House Bill 5019, a big $155 million proposal there. And I'm curious, I'm not sure how long that's officially been out there in terms of a long form copy to read. But what are your thoughts on how things are looking in that arena right now?
Yeah, thanks, Kyle. So I've looked at the bill a little bit today. I wasn't on the committee that actually heard the bill. I did see the governor in the House yesterday testifying on it, kind of looking through it. I do have to compliment her for the fact that she's actually trying. I mean, she is reaching out and trying to do something. It's a lot of money. It appears that the money is going to come from, you know, general fund as opposed to a new tax, which won't have to go through. It'll still go through Ways and Means, but it won't be going through with a vote by 3/5 majority as it would require to get a new tax at this point. There's a whole lot in this bill, and some of the things that I see that are really concerning to me is, you know, the amount of some of the checks that they're talking about giving out. But one of the things I've often said with homeless issues is that until we figure out why we're having a homeless problem, I don't think we're going to ever solve the homeless problem. So, you know, there's a couple things I don't see in the bill, and one of those is money directed toward drug addiction problems. I don't see anything directed toward mental health, and I don't see anything directed toward veterans assistance in those issues. So I'm concerned about that, and if I end up in the ability to speak on it, I'll probably be asking those questions.
Now, talk about, I know that you were testifying on something yesterday. What was that in regards to?
Yeah, so as you probably know, search and rescue is one of my really near and dear things that I do with the Sheriff's Department locally. And we have a bill going through right now, which will help. It's a bill that I wrote. This bill will help when we're actually looking for somebody, that gives the officer the ability to ask for a somewhat like a search warrant, although it's not necessarily called a search warrant, but a subpoena. If there's people that have information on the whereabouts or which direction the person might have went. And it seems like a simple bill that should have been passed a long time ago, but it never actually made it through to a hearing. Yesterday, I was able to get it into a hearing, and Lieutenant Brad O'Dell actually spoke on the bill as well, and we had some other testimony, written testimony, and it's sounding really good. This will make a huge difference in our ability to go out and find a lost subject and hopefully potentially save a lot of lives.
Talk about some of the specifics of how it would work.
Well, as things exist right now, we don't have the ability to, like, call the cell phone company and ask for the records of the calls of the person that's missing, that type of thing. Cell phone companies are, and this is just one example, but there are protections in the law that keep them from having to give up information, even though information in something like this would be helpful to the whereabouts and obviously the livelihood of the person. It's not that they want to keep those records away from law enforcement. It's that they can't give it to them as the way the law is written today in Oregon. So this loosens that up a little bit. Still has to go through the courts. The circuit court has to actually issue the subpoena. The officer himself can't obviously do that. It has to be done correctly. But it will give the opportunity for every county in the state to be able to have more information going into a search.
And obviously, I would imagine there are times when the information you're starting out with is incredibly limited, which really affects what you're able to do at the beginning in terms of the level of effectiveness.
Yeah, so unfortunately, people watch a lot of television, and they kind of have an idea of how a search actually happens. The reality of it is Douglas County is 5,134 square miles, and that goes all the way from the coast at Reedsport to Crater Lake Park. So if somebody gets lost and we have no idea which direction they went, it's really hard to put boots on the ground if you don't have more information. So this is just another one of the tools that we would use to try to hopefully find people sooner in that first, you know, golden hour or 48 hours and bring them back alive.
What kind of reaction have you gotten to the proposal so far?
It's been really, really good. The Judiciary Committee is where it was heard, and the majority of the folks on that committee are either law enforcement, previous law enforcement, or they are attorneys. And the questioning was appropriate, and it went over well. I suspect it's going to get a work session. I'm hoping for a work session, and if we can get it through work session, we'll take it to the House floor, and it's just a really good bill.
Do you feel like you're getting good bipartisan support there?
Yeah, I really do, especially on that bill. I think in general right now the House is mostly still somewhat centered bipartisan support on a lot of bills. A lot of stuff we've taken through the House anyway has been pretty much both sides have been okay with. But I can see the writing on the wall. It's coming. There's been a few bills that I'm adamantly opposed to. So it's going to get interesting in the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Talk about other bills that you've authored or are working on or advocating for.
Sure. I mean, the big talk up here, aside from homelessness and everything else, is the broadband bills. And you and I spoke a little bit about that, I think, last time we talked. Broadband is, there's a couple of bills, House Bill 3201 and House Bill 3249 are both going through right now. And I encourage everybody to pull those up and take a look at them. And you know, send me an email. Tell me what you think. They both really have the ability to affect rural Oregon, which is where we're from, and hopefully we can add broadband to the list of things in rural Oregon.
And what do you think in terms of the impacts of the current broadband situation? How many areas are really shut out from access?
Well, when you talk about the underserved, this is what it basically the bill states, underserved, and there's a limit on the broadband availability, and then not served at all, which also has some numbers on it. Anytime you get outside of Roseburg city limits and you go into, you know, places like some places around Yoncalla, Tiller, Drain, up to North Umpqua, there's places that don't have high-speed internet access service. It just doesn't exist. So those are what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to work with the bill to make sure that money doesn't go to places in Portland that just need to develop the rest of their area out. I want this money to be spent in rural Oregon, where it actually will have some effect and people will have the ability to add broadband to their service.
And obviously, given all the technology and kind of every sector of business, if that is a bit iffy, that impacts the business community.
It really does, not just on a safety issue for those remote addresses. You know, when we have for instance, when we had the Archer Creek fire, trying to get everybody notified that lived within the boundaries of where the fire was burning, sometimes not having that ability to get through to them to communicate can cause a life and death situation. We just need to service our underserviced areas, and these bills should do that. And a lot of this is mostly federal money, and it's as much as $750 million that's coming. I think it's money well spent.
Talk about the committees that you're on, and maybe remind folks at the front end, since you're a newer lawmaker in Salem, about which committees you were assigned to.
Yeah, so I'm on the Climate and Energy Committee. I'm on the Business and Labor Committee, and I'm also on the Small Business and Economic Development Committee. And we're hearing a lot of bills right now. I don't know if it's just the way they go through, but all these bills, of course, are assigned by the chair. The chairs typically have their agenda. A lot of these bills are controversial in that they want to make a lot of new laws. And in the Climate and Energy Committee, a real concern of mine is they would like to eliminate gas stoves, gas appliances, gas. They want to switch everything over to electricity, which if that's the direction the state wants to go, that's fine. The problem is I think we need the infrastructure to make it happen. And I feel like, especially in rural Oregon, we don't have the infrastructure yet. So a lot of these bills, it's very tough to sit there and listen to them at the hearing and of course, I'm never been afraid to give my 2 cents. So they're starting to get to know me pretty well up here, fighting for Southern Oregon.
When you look at the area of gas and electricity, some people have advocated for the fact that maybe there are advantages to having both options, just given the general fluctuation of things. For instance, when you've got power supply issues with electricity.
Yeah, I think obviously in certain circumstances it would be nice to have both options, but the direction the state's moving is to get rid of all fossil fuels, everything that it powers pretty much, and switch everything to electricity, which in my opinion is it requires infrastructure to do it. And there's a deadline set on when this needs to happen, but there's no infrastructure built to handle it. So the state is basically going after power companies, and they're saying, okay, you're going to do this by this date. And I'm going, okay, if that's what you're going to do, I think we need to make sure that we're ready for it. And I just don't feel like we're ready for it. Maybe in Multnomah County, but not in Douglas County.
All right, more when we come back. State Representative Virgil Osborne, the interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com. 1246 inside Douglas County and News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson coming at 1. Mike Witter's Lawn and Garden Show at 4 on tomorrow's Inside Douglas County. Jeremy Mitchell from Winston Area Community Partnerships. We'll talk about that organization. Also a special event coming up for residents of the Winston, essentially greater Winston area. That's just about a week and a half away. Live from Salem, State Representative Virgil Osborne in his first term as a lawmaker. And I imagine one of the things about being new, you probably look around and learn something new about how things work in Salem just about every day at this point.
Very true statement, Kyle. One thing I really learned really quick is that I think the perception of how things happen up here and the way they actually happen is completely different. I had an idea of how things happen. I had a very detailed in my mind how things are going to be. And when I got here, I found out, well, that's not really how it works at all. So, it's an interesting environment up here. It's very fast paced. We hear a lot of things. I will tell you that one thing that is a concern of mine is that we're passing laws that we're not all experts at. So we're relying on testimony. We're relying on people that are professional about these things, that they come in and they tell us their opinions. But at the end of the day, you have 60 people in the House that are passing laws on things that, you know, we think are good ideas, but not necessarily, we're not experts at it. So, and then we do the best we can, but sometimes the pace is just a little bit scary.
After you were elected, and actually really during the campaign, we talked about your plan for juggling your business, your job, all the different things that you're involved in with this legislative schedule, and back out there now, another proposal to raise the pay of lawmakers, and it's come and gone for a number of sessions, hasn't caught on, but it sounds like there's more interest this time around to having a pretty significant increase in pay for lawmakers in Salem. What are your thoughts watching that?
You haven't seen that bill yet. I've been so tied up in the committees I'm in, I have not heard of it coming through. It's interesting. This is far from a part-time job, I will tell you that. We spend a lot of time here. Typically, I come into the office about 7 o'clock in the morning, and we try to get out of here at 5 o'clock in the evening, but generally it's after 6. And then almost every evening during session, there's something that we need to go to, an after-hours event that we have to go to. Some of it's optional. But, it's definitely a full-time job, especially during session. And then, of course, the amount of dollars it costs to do the traveling and, finding a place to stay. So I could see where it would make sense to raise the salary. I could see where that would maybe open up the ability for people who couldn't afford financially to run for a position would then afford, if they win, of course they would be able to afford to hold the position. But it's definitely not a spot where you you have to be financially stable to be here, that's for sure.
And, of course, historically, the concept was a citizen legislature and hence a part-time position. But the reality of the workload and all the things you've got to shuffle and adjust to, it seems like there would be a lot of people out there that might have some interest in it, but certainly would not be in a position to do that because they weren't, you know, not either financially more well off or at a point in their life where they could divert some other resources within the company maybe they worked at or managed to get other people to take on some of their roles for a while.
Yeah, very true. I mean, I can tell you a couple of weekends ago, I do a lot of my work for FCC on the weekends now because I don't have the time to do it during the week. So, you know, a couple of weekends ago, I left on a Thursday after our committee meetings and I drove to Stockton, California, surveyed a restaurant, drove up to Chico, California, surveyed another restaurant, and then ended up coming back on Saturday night and going back to Portland and then coming back to Salem on Sunday. So I never really got to go home. You know, it's just one of those juggling things that you do, and it's a commitment to take this position. And, you know, I don't do it for the money. I do it for the people that I represent. That's for sure.
Now, have you had so far any direct communication with the governor?
Been in a few meetings with her. Actually, today and the rest of this week, we have scheduled lunch meetings with her. Today's not my day, actually, but I think I'm scheduled to meet with her on the 7th. She has been, as you can tell by 5019, she's been very busy. And she's been in the house a few times, but I haven't had a chance to sit down personally and talk to her. But I look forward to that soon.
And any response to her coming to Douglas County as the second stop recently on her One Oregon Listening tour?
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to speak with her after that. Although yesterday I did, I did send her a message shortly after the event that had happened at the senior center, just so she was aware of it. And I think it's great that she did come to Douglas County, and I know that she spoke to a lot of people that that really know what they're talking about when it comes to our homeless issues there. So I'm hoping, I really have a lot of faith here, and I'm hoping that she does what she says she's going to do. And so far, she's done most everything she said she's going to do. So hopefully that we have some relief coming to our homeless situation.
Talk about the Republican influence in the session. You mentioned things at this point have been staying more bipartisan. So do you feel like the GOP is getting more attention for some of its viewpoints?
I think right now we're definitely, you have a lot of new legislators, myself included. And I think that we're all kind of finding our groove, figuring out where we are going to be, and kind of everybody's starting to get to know everybody. You know, some of us are more conservative than others. Some of us are louder than others on both sides of the fence. And I'm very conservative on a lot of issues, especially when it comes to, you know, fiscally being conservative. And I think people have started to realize that. I'm also very conservative on climate change issues and that type of thing. So a lot of those paths are still being set. We've only been, you know, a couple of months into this at this point, but I think by the end of session, we're all going to know each other real well. And I think probably by the end of March, you're going to start to see some sparks flying from the committee rooms, and you're going to see the same sparks coming out of the floor from the differences in opinions. That's how I feel.
Well, and you mentioned early on here in this interview talking about some things you were definitely watching, bills that you didn't like. Talk about some of those.
Yeah, being on the Climate and Energy and Environment Committee, I don't like bills that hurt, you know, small businesses, and I don't like bills that hurt people. For instance, when you're eliminating something that's in their life and you're costing them more money, I mean, it's great to replace, you know, electricity with solar power. But realistically, are we going to have a, you know, if we're in the middle of February, March, and we have an event where we have, you know, a foot of snow and we don't have electricity because there's no sun, you know, I really have to look out for the people that I represent. And I don't think that's always the case up here, because I think in general what they think is good for Portland is good for the entire state. And we have our own unique needs. So that is probably my biggest watch right now. That, and I also really have concerns about the drug issues. And I really think we need to be spending money to rehabilitate. And we need to really, we really should get rid of Measure 110, because I think 110 is probably a large part of why we are where we are with the homeless issue and the drug addiction problems.
Is anyone formally advocating to do that?
There are bills that are chipping away at 110, and I can't tell you the numbers on them right now, but I've seen them. There's like 4,000 bills going through right now, so it's really hard to keep track of all of them. I actually have a full-time guy that does that for me. yes, there are. Unfortunately, the majority of bills that are going through right now have to do more with getting rid of the things we love, like our fossil fuel-powered vehicles. I mean, they'd like to see all that go away. What I really would like to see is a concerted effort from the public, especially in Douglas County, to look at these bills. You know, it's easy to see them online and testify. There's power in testimony. There's power in personal appearance. But now you can do it on Zoom. You can just write a letter. I've seen some of these bills go through that will have 50 or 60 letters in opposition or letter of support. We look at that stuff. We read those things, and those make a difference to the people on the committees, and that's what we need is participation.
What's one big thing that you're working on in the next week?
I'm chasing a couple of my bills. Probably my biggest one that I'm chasing personally is one for the cat tax reduction bill, that the ceiling reduction bill that I've had. We've been working on that with the state, trying to find a way to replace the money that the bill reduction would cause, because as you know that money does go to the schools, and we don't want to take the money away from the schools. We just want to help the businesses by putting the burden of that on a different location. So that's one that we're working on. The SAR bill, I'm working on that pretty heavily right now to get it to actually get a another hearing on it, so we can actually vote on it, actually a work session on it. And then my committees are loaded with bills. I mean, I'm looking at two this afternoon. There's just tons of stuff.
All right. Out of time for now. We'll talk again next week. State Representative Virgil Osborne, thanks for being on.
Thank you, Kyle. Take care.
1258 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.